SiriusXM Sports presents
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Enough! Horse racing, handicapping,
interviews.
This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Friday, race fans. Sirius 162 XM 207 Sports Zone 999. If you're listening to Sirius XM that way, and at our website stevebick.com. Sorry about yesterday. That was it was just ridiculous. For those of you that aren't on Twitter, and I can't say I blame you. I put up the pictures. What's going on in this village? It's a water project. They warned us. They did. I'll give them credit. They did tell us that it was going to be an upheaval. But it is something. They came through. I don't know. They started. I don't know. They started 2-3 weeks ago, and there's one thing after another. They've dug up, they tore up the sidewalk. They're pulling out, I don't even know what they're doing. I see these big black PVC pipes. They put a new stand pipe in, like a water valve. This is just in front of our house. And then yesterday they knocked out the power. I think inadvertently, because, the power company showed up later. And I kept thinking, this is usually pretty intermittent or pretty brief. No. So as a result, after about an hour and a half, I was hoping maybe we'd come on to 10:30 and give you, partial. I had Tony and I had Dave Hill, and actually it turned out okay for Dave Hill, because Dave was waiting. He was waiting for something too. He was waiting for Rufus Peabody's rankings for the week, and they were not forthcoming. So anyway, Dave Hill later today will do NHL. We'll find out what kind of a NHL, NFL. NHL was good last night. I haven't. I've been good. I didn't harass Dave Grenning or Rich Migliori. Maybe I'll do it after the show. The Buffalo Sabres absolutely a little outburst last night in the Garden, beating the Rangers 6-1. That was pretty good. And they've scored 11 goals the last two games. Kind of exciting for us, for those of us that. Have really, you want to talk about meager opportunities to celebrate when you're a Sabre fan. So I forgot. I've been in conversation with Grenning this morning too, and I forgot to stick it to him on that topic. And maybe Mig is listening. So I should have gotten out ahead of it. Not before we wade into the racing action, and Nick Tamaro will join us first. Callie, a little bit later. Three nice stakes at Laurel tomorrow. We've got stakes today at Aqueduct as the fall season got underway yesterday. I'll talk about our race in a second, but I tell you, very nice card at Aqueduct today. The pick six onward, even with a couple of claimers woven in. There's a two-year-old filly, maiden group, open company, group of eight. There's a 10 claimer going a mile, eight fillies and mares. Then a state breds long on the turf. We love that. 10 of them there. 10 in a 15 claimer. And then the two stakes that finished the card today, the Pebbles, the Pebbly Poo, and the Pebbles and the Bam Bam. No, that would be funny, actually. Autumn Days closes out this Friday card. It's a very good card of racing. We'll talk to Nick and Callie. We'll talk to David Aragona. And, well, Dave, I know, was buried. So we'll get David Aragona to do, and we already recapped some Breeders' Cup with Dave the other day. We'll get, with Dave Grenning, we'll get Aragona's take. And Dave, I know, had a good, he had to have had a pretty good cup because on Friday he liked Magnum Force, right? He gave us Magnum Force. And on Saturday, he liked Soul of an Angel. Like I did, and he was the one who actually, I think, put a lot of people, gave a lot of people pause to look at Rousham Park. So I know, imagine that David had a good cup. We'll get his post-cup thoughts, and there is post-cup news. In fact, you heard, of course, the other day from Brooke Smith, Sierra Leone co-owner. And he speculated. He pretty much, and Chad hinted at it. They confirmed yesterday he's back as a four-year-old. So, as we discussed a little bit this week, a couple different times, arguably the three highest profile three-year-olds, Sierra Leone, Fierceness, and Mystic Dam. When they're all going to be back. So, stop complaining about retirements. There's three, right? There's three, those are the three highest profile, right? interesting hints, and I'm trying, I don't know yet if Ron Gierkink is going to visit. I hope so, because a very good card tomorrow at Woodbine, if you haven't looked. Got a terrific card at Woodbine with the Bessarabian, the Autumn, and the Maple Leaf. In fact, I got it here. Here it is. The late pick five starts with a second level allowance going three quarters, field of eight. You got 13 in the Maple Leaf, including, oh, Ron just said he's not available today. That's too bad. All right. You got 13 in the Maple Leaf, including Caitlin Her Greatness, your plate winner. And she's 5-1. She drew widest. It's a mile and a quarter, though. So we'll see what Hernandez figures out for her. And we talked to it's funny, we were so focused on Moira the Breeders' Cup win with Kevin Attar. We didn't even look ahead to this. He's also got Fashionably Fab in here, who's a lower price actually, with David Moran, 3-1. Good group. Cassie's got Elysian Field. Brendan Walsh, Queen Regent, 4-1. Millie Girl in here for Catherine Day Phillips. It's quite something, actually. The Queen's Plate winner, 5-1, third choice. And you got to. I'm sure that draw is going to put people off. We'll see. Maybe they change up a little bit and let her. A mile and a quarter. She's got a chance to pass the stands and find a slot. The Bessarabian's got 14, including Clement up there with Gallon or Rush. Speaking of Clement, you may have seen Roses for Deborah. She sold at a big number. Because yesterday we didn't get we didn't get a chance to talk about the Wednesday numbers, but the sale continues to be very strong. And, any broodmare prospect or broodmare in foal, anything, it's got a fancy page, is fetching big numbers. But Clement brings Gallon a Rush up there with Romero Mariah. pretty cool. Actually, let me confirm that. I'm wondering if, now that I think about it, and we should really check up next week. We'll do that. We'll check. Yeah, it is Romero, because Rajiv, I haven't really looked to see how many more mounts and if Rajiv, while we were away at Breeders' Cup, how his return to the saddle is going. Then the autumn field of 12. Trombetta up there with Mrs. Weber's Forever Super, 3-1, slight favorite over Cassie's Paramount Prince. Boy, it's one of the cool things, right, about the Canadian Triple Crown. They always seem to keep running. Very good card. And then the sequence closes with a first level allowance going 6.5. Open company, fillies and mares, field of 13. This is probably the best sequence. Tomorrow, maybe. Well, although I think there's good racing in a lot of places. Churchill, too. We'll talk to Scully later. But 8 by 13 by 14 by 12 by 13. So you say you want full fields? Here you go. Take advantage, right? Speaking of Churchill, the Dream Supreme, 3/4 tomorrow, goes as the 9th. Safi Joseph, and we missed Safi yesterday because of the washout. But you see that? See that flooding in Spain? Unbelievable. River City, speaking of rivers and flooding, the River City, the Grade 3, closes out the action. Actually, I mean, doesn't close it out. It's the feature. There is an 11th race as well, an allowance, starter allowance. But the River City, the Grade 3, field of 10. And Safi's got the favorite there with Cash Equity. Shug, Battle of Normandy, Emmanuel in there for Maker. Brendan Walsh with Reckoning Force. So, Churchill's got a good card. Del Mar back in action today. What else? Remington, I should mention. We got a couple of stakes. You got a couple of stakes this evening. The Don McNeil, right? And the Silver Goblin. And earlier on the card, the Slideshow just drew 5. Yeah, what else? Yeah, there you go. Del Mar, the Cary Grant, as the actual Bing Crosby season gets going. The good, this meet at, from here on, you look toward the end of November, honestly, for the Hollywood Turf Festival. Always good. Always good. Hollywood Derby, they got mentioned Wednesday, right? And the Matriarch and the Juveniles as well. Speaking of Juveniles, by the way, I saw that, and next week we'll have to reach out next week to Joe Lee, because Mayday Ready is going to go to Japan for that 2-year-old stake. Yeah, pretty cool. Good for Joe. Yeah, that was one. Look, you finish second to that Lake Victoria. That's a distinguished performance. Make no mistake. So I don't blame them for taking a high profile route, right? What else? Hammer later. We'll see. And of course, Hammer gets to take some bows, because he got both of his betting companion plays. He nailed them both. Good for about a grand. Nicely done by Hammer. He was trying to swap out one of his races, and I'm sure he's glad he didn't, because, right, I think the Fillion mare turf. I think he was looking to trade it for with James or whoever and Seth, but nobody took him up on it, and then he nailed it. Yeah, he cashed for $485 in the Philly and Mare turf, and in the dirt mile, he cashed for $653. So, yeah. Almost $1,150 in the two plays from Hammer. And you know what? I'm just realizing I didn't really add it all up. But between his play and then mine in the Philly and Mare sprint, came pretty close, I think, to at the least breaking even if you played all, if everybody played the, all the bets. And there were a few, there were a couple of scratches that, kind of impacted some of the, some of the plays. But, yeah, pretty good. What else? A couple of news items. A lot of this can, I think, can be held off. It's the Hanshin, here it is, the Hanshin Juvenile Phillies, by the way, December 8th at Kyoto. The fairground stuff, we can wait. Plenty of time for that as we inch closer to the opening down there. Seeing some images, and you're getting some, some hints about who's going. And that stuff we can keep as well for HISA. All right. I don't need to. Yeah, the rest of this can all wait until next week, to be honest. Yeah, let's start talking. Brian's doing the engineering today, and he said he's a Ranger fan, so he's not happy with me beating up on the Broadway Blues the way the Sabres beat up on them last night. Yeah, too bad. We got to celebrate. When you're a Sabre fan, you celebrate every opportunity. Yeah, it's funny because they've got some people to root for. I have some nice players. Tage Thompson, obviously. I'll save the absolute savaging of NFL officiating for Dave Hill's visit. But as it happens, I was sort of half asleep and half awake, and ended up seeing the end of that game last night. So for those who when there's steward issues and people say, only in racing. Okay. See, cause now you can legally bet on professional sports, right? Okay. So let's acknowledge that the stewarding there has got all the same trappings and annoyances and frustrations and outrages that we have to endure as players. With our stewarding, because I watched that game for 10 minutes and I saw two missed face masks that should have been called on Joe Burrow being face masked. And, then there was the hold on the 2-point conversion. And potentially a pass interference on the 2-point conversion. I mean, there were literally three uncalled penalties on the most important play of the game last night. But only in racing, remember, only in racing is the officiating a problem. Only in racing. I mean, it was unbelievable. And I was watching on the phone. Tina was asleep, so I didn't put the TV on. So I got the phone, and it's the size of whatever, what is it, 3 by 2 inches, and I could see them. And then I read all about it this morning too. I saw that I wasn't the only person that amazing. And I'll let Nick riff on this too, because the funny part about these kinds of topics is that you see people say, I can't believe I bet on this stuff. And it's the same, you know, it's that same complaint that we see, you know, when calls go against us, or there's no calls when we think there should be. I see people say, I can't believe I bet on this. Well, join the club. that's part of that's part of what we deal with quite often. Here I am. I'm Brian. Do you want to? Why don't you reach Nick and let me know when you got him, if you would. And I can talk about yesterday for a second. Dave Grenning sent me a very funny text after Shazando's race. Yeah, he said he said if Shazando had won, he said, I might never be able to go to the track again after, you know, basically trying to be at his races as much as I can be. You know, it's obviously not as easy to go to to Aqueduct as it is to go to Saratoga. But he ran very well yesterday. There was no catching Levine's winner. Spoken bluntly. And then, you know, it's funny. This is the same horse that when Shazando came back last month, about 3 weeks ago, a little bit after, you know, he was off 6 months and he showed that speed and, you know, Katie Davis, didn't try to wrangle him back at all, let him go. And he, you know, frankly, hurt Spoken Bluntly's chances to win. Spoken Bluntly got caught late. And so here we were again. And it's so crazy for a horse that had been, you know, throughout his career, he's really been a horse that comes with one run. And then in these last three races, I mean, and granted, the race in April, it was a mile, and he sort of, you know, just was out, you know, was just kind of out galloping, and it was good for third and second. He kind of came out of that with a strain and was off 6 months, and then comes back and he was very eager to run, and so he showed speed. But then yesterday, and Gary said to Jose Lascano, you know, if nobody goes with that leader, because everybody, I think, expected Spoken Bluntly to, you know, make the lead. He said, don't let him get, you know, too far away. He said, try to stay in contact. And so he did. And when it became clear, and Zando broke sharp again, and he went on. Jose latched on to him. He eased from the inside. He eased to the two path. And stayed within about a length. He probed a couple of times to try to get closer, but just couldn't. So settled for second. That's his, I think, his sixth, right? His sixth. He's been second six times and third another four. It's crazy. It, you got to think he'll win at some point. So we'll just keep plugging. He'll have to go to the dirt now. He had a career best fig at a 78 buyer. And he has to run into what is clearly a pretty good horse of Bruce's here. This Spoken Bluntly. It was his seventh career start, and he had hit the board four times. So thanks to Gary, and thanks to Jose Lascano. And we'll come back and Try again next month or later in the month. That's all you can do with him. He's been great. You know, he had those two stretches. He's had stretches where he's had to sit out. It's kind of the weird scenario. He's got a little, and it's nothing, you know, really pronounced. It's something up in a shoulder, and three different times he's had to, you know, let it just sort of, you know, let whatever inflammation dissipate. So it's a little frustrating. I in the meantime, he's made $170,000. It's crazy without winning. I'll tell you what, he's a 6-year-old. He's going to be a 7-year-old, obviously, in 7 weeks. And you wouldn't, I mean, you look at him. He looks spectacular. So, as we call him, the big horse. All right, Nick Tamaro is delayed. Nick is delayed. So he can't see us until he can't talk to us until next hour. So I'll tell you what we should do then is probably flop with flip-flop with David, I think. All right? I think that's what we'll do. We'll get Aragona in here and do a little bit of the same thing later, I guess, with Nick. Yeah. All right, Brian, here. Go ahead and get go grab David instead. And then we'll keep Callie in the same spot. I know this way it won't be a cascading mess. All right. Well, we got the big horse, the other big horse, Landauer. We got a nice video of him this morning. He looks good. He's gonna. It might be easier for him to make the transition back to dirt. He only got the one turf start in this year, but we'll look to come back with him on the dirt. So that's nice. Hey, look. If nothing else, it's action, right? For partners and, but a horse like Shirzando, you know, to be this competitive and to have come so close. I mean, he's been beaten what, a neck, three times, a neck or a head. In fact, David Aragona certainly has handicapped Shirzando enough to comment on this. David, good morning.
Good morning, Steve.
David, you got any suggestions for us? What do I have to do? What does Gary and I? What do we have to do to get Shirzando get his picture taken?
I mean, he's picking up those checks. The turf friends seem to be for him. Just second and third, I think, is the preference.
And then to run into that horse of Bruce's yesterday, who everybody was against.
Well, everyone was against, and then Maggie Wolfendale was listening to her Paddock report, and she was basically saying, "You're all wrong. This horse looks amazing. He's going to win today."
we'll have to get, I don't know, three tries probably over the winter on the dirt. He looked spectacular yesterday. It was exactly what, in fact, Andy, that's the best part. Andy picked him yesterday, which he never does. He always uses him underneath. And, the price was nice. I tell you, $22 exacta was quite fine. Two of them.
Yeah, well, that was that weird, I guess it's a new condition. They ran 75,000 maiden claimers, so you had the horses dropping out of maiden special weights, those moving up, and it was pretty tough group for New York breds running for a claiming tag.
Well, and that it's funny you bring that up, because that whole group from the race for 40, the principals turned up from it, and the purse was enhanced running for 75. It was arguably on paper tougher than the 40, which it's, I guess it's supposed to be.
Yeah, and then some of those 40s, they come up pretty tough, fast races. So, yeah, it for a pretty competitive affair and ran well, just the usual results.
Well, we had some usual results last weekend, and then you had, you know, just the right amount. It seems the nice mix of prices and you know, some logicals to build off of, and you, I'm guessing that you had a solid cup betting wise.
It was good. It was definitely one of the better ones. I mean, I was saying to a friend of mine, it's always kind of disappointing when you put in days and days of work and then you get to the Breeders' Cup and you feel like every decision you made was wrong. And I've definitely had Breeders' Cups like that. Luckily, this year was not that. And some races really did play out as I saw them on paper, including some of the races that had prices come in. So that was nice. Those multi-race bets are still like nearly impossible to put together. And my hat's off to people who made some of those huge scores. But even a few of the win exact trifecta payouts definitely made my weekend pretty nice.
Well, and let's touch on a few and you know, get some, you know, maybe some lessons and some things to take away. And on Friday, you know, going back to our conversation, our handicapping discussion, you like Magnum Force, and he was very good in here. And the Japanese speedball really barely got a call.
Yeah, I mean, the more I looked at the race, it just kind of felt like Governor Sam was not going to let Ikorosi get a loose lead, even if that horse broke well. And you kind of knew from watching his races in Japan that was not exactly a guarantee. And when he, I mean, he didn't get totally left to Ikorosi, but he broke about a half length slowly. And in that field, with a fast horse like Governor Sam to the outside, that was just the kiss of death for him. But he could never get back into the race after that. And I think we started to see this trend, which was kind of bucking what a lot of people had been saying about Del Mar, where everyone was worrying about this short stretch, especially in the turf races. Horses weren't going to be able to close. Well, if you had watched races at Del Mar, really, you know, over the entire course of them running there, and especially coming into this meet, horses close on the turf at Del Mar all the time, regardless of how short the stretch is. I think we started to see the trend right in this juvenile turf sprint where, I mean, they went pretty quick up front, but even though it was a flat 5 furlong, the race kind of fell apart. And amazing ride by Colin Keane on Magnum Force. But, you know, as I was saying when I was on the last week, if you had watched his races in Europe, you kind of knew he was a horse that would go through traffic or race inside of horse. He just seemed so handy at like the Euro that would actually translate his form well to American racing, and he did so.
Nick Luck had mentioned too about Jer Lyons, clearly you know, somebody that we're gonna see more of, and I happened to catch the video feed where Arizona Blaze, Eddie Olchek liked Arizona Blaze, and so I'm sure some people put everything together in here. There was also, should mention, Appleby, who was trying to win this race for a second year in a row. It's so funny, between Big Mojo and then last year's winner that came back, Big Evs. It's funny that both of them are named, have big in their names, because they're both the size of maybe Great Danes. That Big Mojo, I've seen bigger Great Danes. It was crazy how tiny he was.
Yeah, I mean, well, you watch some of those races in Europe, and a lot of those horses that excel in the sprint races over there, I think it requires maybe different attributes than to come over here. And he was one that maybe you worried about him taking the turns as well as some others. And I think we saw a little more of that in the turf sprint on Saturday, where Right. Some of the horses that really excelled over the straight courses over there maybe weren't as suited to running over here. Bradsell comes to mind. That's something that I've kind of had to pick up over watching races with experience, just the attributes that horses show over there that might translate better here than some others.
Well, it's funny you say that, too, because I had the conversation on Wednesday and with Stephen Wells, the BCBC winner, and that's one of the things that he's really worked hard at, which is watching European racing and having a feel, you know, and an expectation of you know, who might excel when they come here. We'll get back to Bradsell when we talk about Saturday. The Juvenile Fillies, you know, immersive looked obvious going into it. The first big disappointment, or I should say the second disappointment for Japan, came in this race after Ikoro Sieg. Here was American Bikini bet down to 4-1, and I mean, her race was over a half mile in.
You know, I was tweeting about this on Friday night when I thought about it more, and once it kind of dawned on me, I was feeling a little silly for joining the chorus of people who thought that the Japanese might have success on this Friday card. Because when you think about it, this was a new frontier for them. When have they ever shipped a two-year-old over really anywhere with a chance to a major racing meet around the world? I mean, this was kind of the first time they brought horses in that were actually going to attract some support against the best in the world. And as we've seen, I mean, it took many, many years for the Japanese horses that are three-year-olds and up to have success on the world stage. And I think this was just the first iteration of what we might see down the line. And when you actually watch the two-year-old racing in Japan, you know that they only have Group 1 racing over there in December, at the very end of the year. And
right,
the really good two-year-olds in Japan only gear up for the very end of the season to sort of just start to hit their peak form before their three-year-olds, because the races that really matter over there are when those horses turn three. There's not the emphasis on two-year-old racing in Japan like there is over here, and it's kind of structured that way by design. So I think in future Breeders' Cups, if those horses come over again, we are probably wiser to view them through that lens.
The point well made. The first of the two O'Brien winners came in that Juvenile Fillies turf, and Lake Victoria. I think even people who generally want to try to, you know, find a reason to be against Euro Invaders, I think everybody kind of acknowledged that you know, I think they heard enough over the lead up, David, that this Lake Victoria might really be special, and then she confirmed it.
Yeah, I mean, she looked like a standout on paper. You knew she was going to be an extremely short price, but sometimes it's just not too not wise to take shots against those horses. She delivered. You know, had a little bit of traffic trouble into that clubhouse turn, but Ryan Moore is so cool-headed, and he just was able to keep a lid on her, got her to settle, and, you know, once it became apparent the path was going to open for her, this race was basically over. You know, Mayday Ready, she just shows up every time. She ran up well for second, but it never looked like she or anybody else was getting to that winner.
Well, and the fun prices that popped up here in the exotics, Nitrogen and Fiery Lucy, they had some backers. There were people who waved flags for Nitrogen, including Seth Merrow, who was on hand at Woodbine, you know, in the prep. And there were plenty of Euro observers who said that Fiery Lucy, including our man, the long shot lad Kev Humphreys, you know, thought that Fiery Lucy might be worthwhile. 46-1. Nitrogen was 49-1. The thing that was inexplicable, and I haven't seen all that much discussion about it, what was Hector Berrios doing? Where was the fire on Thought Process?
You know, I honestly haven't gone back to watch the start with her. I don't know if anybody else that was looking to show speed didn't, but I mean, the fractions definitely came up a little faster than you would have expected when you saw that she was in front early. She doesn't have to run that way.
No.
Maybe the thought process was that it's such a large field and you want to keep these horses out of trouble, and being on the lead can allow you to do that, but you also run the risk of going too fast. And as we talked about, it's these turf races at Del Mar, it just seemed like one after another, a horse that led into the stretch was getting caught by the time they got to the wire. So many
right.
races falling apart. This one fit that pattern.
That got us to the boys, the late double, the dirt and the turf. And, you know, Citizen Bowl, there was so much positives on the workout tabs. Callie Francois is going to be with us next, and in our betting companion, she raved about the way he worked. Toby Terrell loved him. So did Andy Harrington. And I picked him and keyed off of him, David. But I got to tell you, when he was floating 12, 13, 14 to 1, and then ultimately 16 to 1, he was so dead on the board. You get nervous. You see a Baffert horse not getting bet, I mean, at all.
Yeah, it was a little strange to me that they went all in on gaming and kind of ignored this horse when, as you said, the workouts were fantastic. I believe he had outworked gaming in their key drill for this race. So it just seemed a little strange. Obviously, it seemed on paper like Citizen Bowl was inevitably going to get hooked up with one of the other speeds in the race where gaming might sit the better trip. So maybe that's what people were thinking ahead of time. And, you know, the race completely changed at the start. It was hard to foresee that these horses would get the trips that they did. And it is kind of disappointing. You hate to see a race like this that there's so much anticipation built up towards. And then three jumps out of the gate, the entire narrative gets thrown out the window. And the race basically looks like it's a foregone conclusion with the race through the way that the field shapes up into the clubhouse turn. And that's kind of how this one played out. It's kind of crazy to compare the fractions of this race to the Juvenile Fillies, where they went almost 3 full seconds slower to the half mile here than the Juvenile Fillies did. That's a crazy disparity, and it allowed this horse to wire the field. It's just hard to know what to make of this race, and it kind of leaves a lot of questions about these horses heading into next year.
Jonathan's Way, it was kind of meekly steered around there. You mentioned East Avenue, of course, who you know stumbles out and is immediately compromised, race over as the 2-1 favorite. Chancer McPatrick obviously is going to be compromised by, you know, that kind of a pace. He put in, you know, whatever run Pratt could manufacture. I was kind of tickled by Hill Road, who we had talked about and who we kind of featured in the analysis first time on dirt. And, you know, he closed better than anybody else did to pick up third here and boost the try into the $1,500 range for 50 cents.
Yeah, he had dirt pedigree. I didn't quite see him running this well based on his prior form, but I think the dam is a half to City of Light. So, I mean, he certainly was bred for the dirt, and he handled it. He closed where nobody else did. Look, Chance McPatrick, he was really disappointing. Same for Ferocious, who seems like a really frustrating horse. I mean, he basically took himself out of the race around the far turn and then was running on again at the end. And he's one they've got to get sorted out. This race just featured more disappointments, I think, than it did encouraging performances by horses you want to look forward to next year. So it is the kind of race that I kind of want to just draw a line through and see these horses face off against each other again.
Well, just like in the with the girls' race on dirt, the girls' race on turf, little faster early than the boys, and Henri Matisse, I was put off personally a little bit by the post, and I suppose Ryan Moore offsets any of those kinds of concerns, David.
Yeah, I mean, the post, I guess we compromised this horse a little bit because he really never saw the rail. I mean, he was 2 to 3 wide most of the way, but it didn't seem to matter.
No.
Another race that, I like Dream On, and I love the trip that he was getting, setting what seemed like a more moderate pace than they set in the Juvenile Fillies turf, but they came into the stretch, and it became clear this was another race that was just going to come apart at the end, and Henri Matisse made that big move. I mean, El Mori City was probably closing fastest of all for third at the end, but he was left with a little bit too much to do, and Gabe Nepper by the long shot, Iron Man Cal, he hit the front a little too soon. But it was a competitive field, but felt like Henri Matisse was the best horse, and not a big surprise. It kind of looked like that on paper coming in. The only thing he had to overcome was the draw, and he was able to do so.
To me, the big disappointment was Mentee, who I thought had a license to stretch out favorably going into this.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of you kind of knew what was coming with him when they didn't even try to make the lead with him. And I personally didn't get him at all in this race. And I mean, he didn't run well. I'm not gonna.
Yeah,
I'm not
no reason to belabor. I hear you. Turning to Saturday, and I'm going to mention one undercard spot because Rakia. The Owen Burroughs Shadwell, winner of the Goldikova, wire to wire at 5-1, I thought was notable because they came over hoping to get into, you know, a feature race with that 3-year-old filly, and then they settled for this spot, and it's a reminder that some of those horses that you know that end up not getting into the Breeders' Cup, and you know they stick around. They need to be looked at more. I was kicking myself the minute I saw her loping along on the front end. I thought, ugh, I completely missed in this spot.
Yeah, I mean, she was one of the few horses that actually was able to set the pace and go gate to wire in here, but the pace had a lot to do with that. She really slowed it down to the middle portions of the race and was able to sprint home. Was a race that seemed like it had kind of a murky pace scenario. Hard to see her being the one to set the pace when you watched her in Europe, because she had, you know, between the two Euros, her and Kathmandu, kind of seemed like the other one was the more likely to lead. She had been a front runner overseas, but their style kind of flipped here. Frankie Dettori broke well and played the break to go forward, and she took them all the way. And I think they were saying on the broadcast, this is a filly that's actually going to stay in the U.S.
Right.
Next year. So I guess we'll look forward to seeing her again.
I want to also mention the opener on Saturday, David, because the horse of Rolando Quinones, Tis Quantum, was on the AE list, and you know, for those of us that have to write up races and you know work with public handicapping, you know, in this particular case, you know, you get the scratches. It's early, fairly early in the morning. I had to go from the hotel to, you know, to the track. I see that there's the scratch. And I just kind of, you know, glanced at the horse. I looked at some figs, and I just didn't even give him serious consideration. And then, of course, you know, when he wins at 26-1, you just feel, you know, you feel like you let yourself and anybody that's following, you let them down. And then this was a horse that had cleared the condition. He was the only horse in the field that was in for the tag. I mean, it's like handicapping 101.
I don't know if I would have liked this horse if he had drawn into the field. I mean, I guess if you want to view him as a horse that only wins when he's coming off a 13-month layoff, I mean, maybe that's an angle, because his prior turf victory had come off
right. The
exact same layoff duration. Look, he had run some big figures on the dirt. His turf races didn't really stack up against these. Maybe he had improved. Hard to foresee coming off this long of a layoff, at least for me. As a 7-year-old who had only made 8 starts in his career, this horse, he wanted a huge price. I guess you can always go back and find things to like about a price horse. I'm not going to pretend I would have liked this one.
There's nothing to me more glaring than a chart where there's only one horse that was in for the tag and he wins. It happens to be something that I usually, you know, Monday through Sunday, you know, on mundane handicapping opportunities, I pick up on, and this I saw that the horse drew in, and I just sort of glanced and didn't, you know, did not re-handicap or you know, for instance, I saw too after the fact that, which is kind of crazy. I mean, the 2 460-day layoffs is kind of weird, the way he broke his maiden. It's kind of funny. That gets us to a horse we both liked, and that was Soul of an Angel, and There was a lot, I thought, to like about her. You talked about her when we met as well, and this was some great way to start the Breeders' Cup Saturday action.
Yeah, she was a great price. The trip worked out. You know, my theory of the case was that everyone was viewing society as some low in speed in this race. And, I mean, it just kind of seemed to me like a horse like Pleasant wouldn't be in here unless Baffert was planning to send her. And he did, and the pace got a little more competitive than I think people anticipated that it would. And that was exactly what Soul of an Angel needed. I mean, you kind of knew that she would just walk away from the blocks like she did. She has no early speed, but once you start to put in that run, you also had that confidence that she would keep coming, and keep coming she did, and she got there at the end with a pretty generous price.
The 41.60, and Society wins a photo that I was sure she was going to lose, and it ended up being a very good start. You know, Vava really never involved. Ways and Means kind of chased meekly, and other than that, I mean, Scylla, I think there were plenty of people that wanted to see more from her. Got us to the turf sprint, and you mentioned Bradsell. I don't know how much the TV feed showed Bradsell, David, but he was miserable. He was doing things with his tail that indicate a horse that absolutely had no interest. Then he was recalcitrant and balky loading, and he was not happy to be there Saturday.
Yeah, he just seemed like the wrong horse to me for this race, from the post draw to seeing the way that he had run his races overseas. Just of all the Euros, he seemed like the one that was going to be least adaptable to this situation. I mean, you could see, I was actually a little surprised they were as aggressive with him as they were, trying to go after Cogburn. Hard to foresee him out-dueling that one on the front end. Maybe that's the way he had to run. But, you know, a big part of that perception people had that Cogburn, like, put the pedal to the metal on the turn was that Bradsell didn't take the turn, and he just dropped away, and it kind of left Cogburn on that two- or three-length lead that he, you know, he would have had with that horse dueling with him. But look, the pace was fast, and it ultimately came apart. The winner went from last to first, and the runner-up closed from the second-to-last position. So, I mean, this was a race that completely fell apart. And, I mean, you can make the argument that Cogburn might have run the best race in defeat, but the way things played out, one of many favorites who looks like they could be in the conversation for a championship, and went down to defeat on Saturday.
We mentioned Big Evs and everything involved with him trying to, you know, come back here and be a juvenile and adult turf sprint winner, Tom Marquand. There was Motorious, yet another Phil D'Amato horse that ran well and got beat. I thought Ag Bullet ran very well. By the way, you got to tell everybody your father's story. That was so great. I saw that tweet. I'm glad I thought of that.
Yeah, I was watching this race with my dad, and you know, he follows racing, but he's not following it like day in and day out like we do. So I mean, he's kind of assessing some of these horses that maybe he's not like always so familiar with them or handicapping the major races like this. And he was talking to me about this horse, and you know, he was asking like, "Oh, how do you say this name? What does this mean?" I was like, "I don't know. The announcers don't seem to know how to say this horse's name." Ag Bullet, AG Bullet, and he's watching her on the track, and he's like, "Oh, you know, she's a gray horse. Probably she's named that because AG is the chemical symbol for silver on the periodic table." I'm thinking to myself, like,
oh my God.
You know, that makes a ton of sense. Yeah. My dad was a pharmacist. This is his career, so of course he knows something like that.
That is so good. I got the biggest kick out of that. Almost as funny as when I saw you and him in the paddock this summer, and you said, "This is my dad," and I said, "Really? No kidding." The spitting image of your father. What can you say about Torpedo Anna? You know, I'm sure some people, anybody that's that isn't 100% in her, you know, in her corner, is going to say, "Well, she got the path of least resistance the way things unfolded." You know, with you know, the various defections and retirements, and then even awesome result having to scratch the morning of?
Well, I think that's a fair thing to say. This just did not really shape up as a competitive race the way things played out and all the defections. But at the end of the day, she showed up. She beat the field that she was supposed to beat. Others were not able to do so on this card, and I think she just becomes the de facto choice for Horse of the Year. Not so much based on this performance, but based on her entire body of work this year. The fact that she ran fierceness to that close decision in the Travers, confirming that she could step up against the very best in the country, even if she didn't beat him on that day, I think it makes her a worthy champion, because unlike fierceness, unlike Sierra Leone, she danced every dance, and aside from that Travers, she won every time. So I think you've got to commend her consistency and also commend Ken McPeak for the campaign he put together.
There's no doubt about it. The turf, and Dave, this was a spot where I think you helped plenty of people by really stressing the chance that Rousham Park had in here. You know, I think everybody respected Rebel's Romance, and anybody building you know, tickets, you know, with the, in terms of verticals, I think everybody knew you had to respect. But Rousham Park was the key to, you know, any of the good exotics in here.
Yeah, he ran great. Maybe he ran the best race. I don't know. I mean, he broke from the rail, and it seemed like they were intent on getting him off the rail. He kind of went wide around both turns. But I wasn't so surprised about that, because watching the races in Japan, that they seem to ride him that way. He doesn't. I guess they have this idea in her head. He's not a horse that runs well inside of horses, so they kept him wide. But I think that also allowed him to stay out of trouble. Some others had a little bit of traffic. Shariar got stuck in some traffic around the far turn, and you know, maybe that messed with his chances a little bit. But at the end of the day, I mean, Rebel's Romance was right on top of the pace. It's not like they crawled up front. William Buick rode him with confidence to make that breakaway move coming to the quarter pole, and it paid off. He had enough in the tank to hold on.
I mean, did Lemaire leave him with too much to do, essentially? Should he have launched that bid a little earlier?
I think it's easy to say in retrospect. I guess if you're making that move over another turf course, there would have been an extra few yards for him to get up. That's the way things played out. It's always easy to look at these races afterwards and say, oh, we should have done this, should have done that. He kept his horse out of trouble, and I think gave him the trip that he's been comfortable getting in the past, and just wasn't quite good enough. I mean, you know, you take a 22-1 shot and he loses by a neck to the favorite. You're always looking for ways he could have made up that slight difference, and there are always things to see when you're taking a trip like that. But I think the point to hammer home is that he was dirtied up coming in, and he ran really well. And if some things had gone different, sure, maybe he could have won. But I don't want to dwell on it too much.
I hear you. I will point out that Gold Phoenix was fourth in here, beaten about, what, four lengths for everything. This is something to file away. I mean, horses like this that have pronounced success on that turf course deserve extra credit. Part of this, you know, he was outposted in the 12 hole. Fry did all he could and ends up, you know, for Superfecta players, you know, Super paid $545 for a dime. I'm sure some people just wrote Gold Phoenix off 32-1. And he helped boost things. Just anybody that runs well on that turf course, like Keeneland, deserves extra credit when you're looking at these.
I think that's 2 years in a row that Gold Phoenix has been fourth in the turf against some pretty tough international field.
Yep.
So, kudos to him for running so well against that level.
Well, that gets us to the classic. David Aragona with us. We'll talk about the New York Stakes this weekend in a second. But what did you think here as Sierra Leone really saves the best trip, the best scenario unfolds for him, and Flavian Pratt and Chad Brown and company get a big prize that he's been seeking all season?
Yeah, I mean, kind of not so different from the Juvenile on Friday. you could kind of see halfway through this race what was going to happen.
Yeah.
The half-mile pole, Sierra Leone looked like he was odds-on to beat this field. I mean, the way he was moving up, the pace that he got ahead of him, the other major rivals to him being involved in that pace. I mean, you could just see he was going to win. And maybe the most surprising part was that he only won by a length and a half, because coming to the quarter pole, it seemed like this might be a total blowout. But Fierceness fought on very gamely. I thought Forever Young ran really well for a horse that was surprisingly close to the pace. I think they made a bit of a tactical error with him, because he is a horse that I think could have been comfortable sitting back where Sierra Leone was,
yep,
as they did in the Kentucky Derby and finished in tandem with him, and they chose different tactics here. It did not work out, but I think it's a credit to him that he ran as well as he did, to still be fighting on at the end, actually coming back a little bit on the top two. He's a horse that I would look forward to seeing in the future if they decide to keep him in training. But, I mean, the three-year-old swept the trifecta here.
Yeah.
I don't think that's a huge surprise based on what we had seen out of them coming in and sort of the lack of strength in the older horse division. And if you viewed City of Troy like I did, you didn't really view him as a factor in this race at all. And it just kind of left those three as the major players. Sierra Leone finally had his day in the sun, getting the pace scenario that he needed all along. And he is going to be that horse moving forward if they proceed on with him, which it sounds like they are. He needs this kind of pace scenario to be most effective, and he's not going to get it every time. But he got it this day in the race that mattered the most, and I would think that's probably going to make him a champion.
Gets us to that started the late pick five. It ended the early pick five. And for those that were able to, you know, pull everything together in that regard, you got yourself a fat 59,000. And then from Sierra Leone, we go to a storyline, David, that I thought was really kind of nice, and that was Kevin Attard, who came to Keeneland with Starship Jubilee, and he obviously has got, you know, a deft hand with some of these kinds of horses, and he erases the bad memory of her dropping Florent Giroux, and Moira was really good in here, and Pratt a Pratt double essentially, 64.50, as he comes right back. I approached the race that, all you had to do was take the two Kevin Attards and you were going to get through it.
Yeah, Moira got, I think, the trip that she needed. It was a race that unfolded at a pretty slow pace, and I think Pratt made a key move down the backstretch,
yep,
to go from that sixth or seventh all the way up to third in that stalking position where he was right there to strike around the far turn. And you got to have the confidence in the horse underneath you to make a move like that, and also be confident in yourself to look like a fool if it doesn't work out, because a lot of jockeys make that move and it bites them in the face. She had enough left in the tank to hold off the late runners, get him to jump on them. It all worked out to perfection. She's been good for a really long time. Kind of hard to believe this is her first ever Grade 1 victory, given how long she's been,
right,
sort of the top level of this game. She's run well in this race in the past, and it all came together this time.
Very much. Appleby and Godolphin with a good showing with Cinderella's Dream, who ended up going favored and was the clear favorite, actually, at 5-2. Didia, another nice effort for Didia. Nacha Correas, keeps her in good form. It's funny, the other Godolphin, Beautiful Love, from the rail, it was a horse, I don't know, I dismissed her pretty quickly. What was your read? I know some people were pouncing on Junior Alvarado's effort with Warlike Goddess.
She did get hung pretty wide. I think there was concern that what happened in the Breeders' Cup turf last year could happen again, where they kept her covered up, and she was never really able to get off cover and was just in traffic the entire race and just never got to do any running. So they kept her out in the clear. It seemed like they were trying to orchestrate a similar trip to the one that she got at Del Mar back in 21, but just trying to time the move better. She's a horse where I think it's easy to overthink the trips, right? Because it's so hard to time her move correctly. She doesn't have a lot of early speed. That short stretch at Del Mar starts to play in your head a little bit. And it just didn't really work out for her. Losing all that ground was going to be tough to overcome. But they also may no longer be at the top for game. I think there's a version of Warlike Goddess that might have been able to overcome all of that. She just wasn't able to here. Kind of surprised she was as dead on the board as she was. I mean, she was nearly 5-1 in this race. I would have made different morning lines in a few races on Friday and Saturday. I mean, this is one where I would definitely not have foreseen that price disparity between her and Cinderella's Dream. But the bettors didn't go for her, and she didn't run her best race.
The sprint, I think, confounded a number of people just because I think the tendency, David, was to look for somebody perhaps that was going to come from off the pace. I mean, it just looked like there was one speed after another. And, boy, John Velasquez just did everything right in here, and straight no chaser, very comfortable letting a couple of speeds go. And when Johnny asked, he responded.
Yeah, the trip worked out for him. Was drawn outside some other speed horses. Those outside of him didn't really go, so he was able to get that trip that you want. If you're a speed in a race loaded with other speed, you want to be stalking outside of them. That's exactly the way things played out. And he had enough to push past that long shot, Ben Tornado, who ran a game race to be second, the three-year-old stepping
He's
up.
He's good.
It was a race that looked like it had a ton of speed on paper. Didn't exactly fly out that way. I think a lot of it had to do with Skelly breaking slowly and then not rushing up the way we've seen in the past, and Don Frankie getting cut off at the start. He looked like he could have been the speed of the speed, but he didn't get a chance to show it. And when you take two speeds out of the equation, then you got three guys in front kind of looking over at each other thinking, all right, we can slow down the pace a little bit, don't have to go so crazy. And the race didn't fall apart the way it looked like it might.
Exactly. Mulligan closed best to be third. You mentioned Ben Tornado. D'Angelo's done a very good job with him. Gun Pilot, the bottom rung of the super, Federal Judge, Nakatomi, etc. The Japanese end up, three of the bottom four in here. Remake, I got to watch it again. What was Remake's story?
He just didn't show up. I don't know. He was where he figured to be early, last. I mean, that's the way he runs. But he just never launched a run. Wasn't just the pace. He didn't show up on the day. And not the only Japanese horse for that to be the case for. I mean, the showing was a little disappointing. I mean, there were the Rauschen Parks and the Shariars, but there were way more performances like those of Remake among the Japanese contenders. So I think in general, they got a little overrated. And I say that as somebody who was part of overrating them.
Well, that gets us to the mile, and another one of the great stories of the weekend with Cherie DeVoe, and more than looks that Jose Ortiz just masterfully handled, and he's not an easy horse to pilot. When he straightened up and changed leads, he exploded and gets past everybody. I don't think Tim Yakteen and company are getting enough credit for the effort Johannes turned in. Another of the players. He certainly got bet. I mean, I thought that was notable that they were right about Johannes from a price standpoint. I mean, and Jeff Siegel priced him right 9-2. Here's a horse that, was coming off the City of Hope win and had won the Eddie Reed over the summer. Another Del Mar winner, and the U.S. Entrants run 1-2 in here ahead of Notable Speech and the two Japanese.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's credit to both More Than Looks and Johannes for running as well as they did against some very good international participants. The race was made a little easier by a couple scratches. Some contenders from Europe that I thought would have had an impact on this race didn't get to play. But take nothing away from More Than Looks. You kind of know when he gets the right trip and the right pace scenario, he's just going to put in that terrific stretch kick. And that was the case. You could kind of see it. As soon as Jose Ortiz was able to get him outside of those horses on the top of the stretch, he just kind of knew he was going to run them down, having watched his races in the past. He's just got that excellent turn of foot through the lane, and he was able to get past them at the very end. Just seemed like a horse that was cycling up to this big effort. It got him the perfect prep in the turf mile. The pace didn't work out that day at Keeneland. It did here, and I guess it throws him into the conversation for champion turf horse, just given the lack of other options. He's a U.S. horse that won a Breeders' Cup race. Nobody else can say that among those that competed on the turf this year.
Yeah, it's true. And then finally, the Dirt Mile, which was a lot of fun. Big full field of a lot of interesting horses. And certainly our listeners were, and those of us that listened to Hammer in our betting companion, full Serrano. Gary Young absolutely pushed this horse on our audience as well. Post Time was touting himself all through the lead up to this race. I know you like Post Time as well as I did, and Full Serrano 2880 to close things out and sent a lot of people home happy.
Yeah, I didn't really see the winner getting the trip that he did or being able to survive the pace that seemed like it was going to develop on paper. Kind of like the sprint, this pace didn't get as hot as maybe it looked it would. For them to only go 45-2 to the half mile, for a mile at Del Mar at this level, that's not particularly fast. Slower pace than the Classic, for sure. He was able to hold on. I did think Post Time ran really well to close from last. To get up for second. All in all, I thought Sheldon Russell gave him the right ride in the race, saved as much ground as he could. It was just second best to the winner at the end of the day. It was a tough race to put together. I personally picked the race 8-9-7-4, and they finished 2-3-4-5, and I had nothing because I didn't see the winner.
Yeah, well, we actually ended up okay and closed things out in there. And David, thanks for a terrific Breeders' Cup. You put people on some valuable horses, Soul and Rousham and Magnum, among others. Gets us to the weekend, and very good card today in New York. And tomorrow, more stakes action as we get rolling into the Aqueduct autumn ahead of the Aqueduct winter.
Yeah, with turf season coming to an earlier end than maybe in some prior seasons, and I think that's been the case since we've run this entire Belmont at Aqueduct and Fall Meet at Aqueduct together while Belmont's under construction. The turf season doesn't last as long, and kind of have to get these stakes in. So we kind of have like two turf stakes a day for the next few days, two on, I think, Saturday and two on Sunday. Today it's a pretty nice card, there's plenty to look forward to over the next 3 days. Today you've got that Pebble Stakes, the eighth race, the grade three going a mile. I'm very intrigued to see Jody's Pride trying the turf for the first time. Yeah. A horse that was intended for turf earlier in her career, obviously panned out on the dirt to be second in the Breeders' Cup at the end of last year, but very intrigued to see her get on the surface that I think she was always intended for here. And I know she was entered last month at a sprint. Tori Abreu kind of rethought it. She's probably a horse that's more suited to the mile. So we'll see if we get her off the layoff. Oversubscribed as the horse to beat. You've got the head case, Makenga, who wants to run off on her jockey. We'll see if Jose Lascano can keep a lid on her here. But that should be an interesting race to watch unfold. And then later today in the next race, the Autumn Day is closing things out. I think Graham Motion has 2B prime for another big effort. She was pretty impressive beating fellow three-year-olds in the Unzip Me out in California. That's the race that's come back to be fairly strong. And she just seems like the one that's moving in the right direction against her main rival, Don't Look Back at All, who is coming off a poor effort, might rebound here against a softer field. But I give slight preference to 2B.
Turn to the Saturday card.
Yeah, you got some more stakes on tap for Saturday on the grass. In the middle of the day, you've got that Hill Prince grade three for the three-year-olds. Interesting field, deterministic, and Cugino probably the two horses to beat here. I slightly prefer Cugino between the two of them, kind of just drawing a line through that race at Kentucky Downs last time, which, I mean, he ran very poorly, so you don't want to be completely ignorant of that. That could be a short price, but he had been fairly consistent prior to that, and getting back on a conventional turf course might be the key for him. I think it's intriguing, and there are a couple Chad Brown runners in here that are moving way up in class. Maybe it's just lack of spots at the end of the season with turf season coming to a premature end, but I think Right to Vote is an interesting horse to land in this race, because he's taken a big step forward from 2-3, and I thought won that race at Saratoga fairly impressively. It's a huge step to face horses of this caliber, second off the layoff, first-time winners, but he feels like the one of the two that could get somewhat ignored in here. It's one that might be able to outrun his odds for some very dangerous connections. So I had a little bit of interest in him. And then going towards the end of the card, you've got the Aqueduct Turf Sprint Championship in race 8. Of course, to beat, obviously, Senbei. He was excellent last time in the Belmont Turf Sprint, which, of course, is run at Aqueduct over the same course and distance. Just feels like a horse that's finally put everything together on the turf as a sprinter. He had had plenty of trips when he first got on the grass, and now they kind of figured out how to ride him, and it's all coming together. I do have interest in the horse right to his outside, the 10 Shefflin, coming in for William Morey. I thought this horse had shown real potential last winter at Turfway. That was obviously on synthetic, but he handled turf at his career debut. Seems like one that shouldn't have too much trouble transitioning back to the surface. And Morey just has great stats with everything around this horse, since to turf, coming off layoffs. And he's drawn well outside with speed in a race that doesn't feature a ton of pace outside of the four. So I thought he was pretty interesting. And then race 9, the feature on Saturday's card, the Grade 2 Red Smith. I personally have trouble seeing past the two likely favorites in here, giving slight preference to Masterpiece over Integration, just trusting Masterpiece more to get the distance. Integration has been a horse that's been a mild disappointment this year, I think, given the expectations that were heaped upon him following that impressive victory in the Hill Prince last year, which we're running this weekend. And, you know, kind of coming full circle now a year later, he's still looking for his first graded stakes win since the Hill Prince in this Red Smith. We'll see if he can get it done. But I just thought Masterpiece was a bit more reliable.
A couple of very good days as we've wade into the fall and winter. David, outstanding. I appreciate it. And if we don't talk before Thanksgiving, happy holiday in that to that regard. And talk soon. Hopefully, obviously, we don't have the same holiday fest we used to with the Cigar Mile and the like, but we'll talk soon.
Yep, I'm sure we'll talk again soon, and good luck to everyone playing the races this weekend.
David Aragona, everybody, horse to watch, obviously, he's got such a good understanding of the way races go. And that's why I wanted to get his full postscript to Breeders' Cup. Good cards today and tomorrow. I don't think there's. Hold on, I got the stake. Where's my stakes? Where's my stakes listing? I don't. Because I didn't get to Sunday. Yeah, the Long Island on right is on Sunday. Where's the? I know I've got it here. Where is it? There it is. The Long Island. Nice. Actually, got a nice 11 horse field here too. Yeah, very nice. And and the Forever Together as well. All right, so today, tomorrow, Sunday, keeping you busy in New York. They're going to keep, they'll, let me, we're going to get to Callie, and I hope we're not late with her, because she does have to, they're working today, and she's gotten 11, I think they start at 11. You know what you can do? Let me, Brian, instead, see, this is that cascading disaster that we always concern whenever you start the day, you know, with a misfire. Nick Tamara will join us in a little bit. There's Callie now. Callie, good morning.
I'm great. I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm good. Did we throw you off? Because you've got when's your pre-show?
Sorry, I didn't catch that, Steve.
What time do you go on air today?
I'm going to be on set about 11:15.
Okay, so I didn't.
I'll be on set about 11:15. The morning show starts at 11:25.
All right. I know, because I was worried we were late getting to you and throwing you off. First of all, first order of business is the big thank you from everybody who latched on to Citizen Bull in no small part thanks to your workout analysis.
Well, no problem, Steve, but I didn't help that much. I'm going to be a bit tough on myself because there were three Colts in that lineup of the workers where I had them ranked pretty closely together. So I'm happy with how, you know, everything went in the race. You know, just by circumstance, the race set up very well for him. So big congratulations to Starlight and all of those connections with Citizen Bull. Just put in a phenomenal work beforehand.
Well, you came come back with a three-stake card tomorrow at Laurel. You know, before we even do that, did you talk to Rachel after her run with Setono?
Yes. Yeah, talked about it a little bit. In fact, it broke well because my biggest concern for her was breaking was just in the break, and it was gonna. But so the horse ran well. The time was a bit quick, and she was a bit crowded and dogged on the entire time. So other than that, she had a great experience over here in California.
And then I know her horse was kind of up the track in the Melbourne Cup. I went to look at the chart because I think she was 20 something in the Cup.
Yeah, it happens, but I didn't. You know, I'm trying to remember who she did. She ride just fine.
No, the map.
Yep, got it. Yeah, yeah. I didn't know anything about that horse. I didn't recap the Cup with her.
Well, we're trying to track down Nick Luck for some of that to get the combination thoughts about both the Melbourne Cup.
Yeah, you should because he's definitely got he was hands on there, so he's a man to go to.
Well, and you noticed the whole thing with this Robbie Dolan with the singing jock, and did you hint to me that you've been known to sing a little?
I mean, I'm not going to speak too much on that, Steve. I mean, I think a lot of people like to sing, and there are plenty of people that do, so it's fun, but not to the level of Robbie for sure.
It's a great story. It's picked up attention worldwide, and he was on with Nick this morning. In fact, he was with Nick Luck, had him on his show this morning, and the episode is
titled, I meant to listen to it. I haven't listened to it yet, but I was fully planning on listening to it.
Yeah, the day that changed my life, Robbie Dolan. Very cool. All right, what's going on at Laurel? And we got the Lewis and the Smart Halo and the 38 Go-Go.
Yeah, I mean, we've got some fun stakes coming in. Where would you like to start, Steve?
Well, might as well start with the fifth. It's start of the Rainbow and smallish field, and it's got the Capuano is back here. It's Hammer Time.
He does. So I think, you know, in regards, let me just sifting through a couple of things.
He ran last week too in the Nashua, and I was a little surprised to see his in here. You think he'll run, or do you think he'll scratch him?
I don't know, because he's got Hernandez on, and Hernandez is 4 for 5 with him. So I have a feeling there's a chance, because I watched that race, and Ruiz kind of just he rode him, but he didn't fully try and get everything out of him, so I'm wondering if that's kind of where Gary's coming from as far as the quick turn back, both in distance and in time frame, of course.
Yeah.
So that's, for me, it's not a hard sell on Gary's part, because Gary's going to do what he wants, but for me, I would love more time. I think the horse will show up. I just don't think we'll see that it's Hammer Time that we saw back in Delaware in those stakes and all those wins. So I go a different direction, actually. I go with the number three, do it for Michael, Jerry, Rob, Xavier Perez. Was really, I loved what I saw there in the Marilyn Million nursery, where there's a little bit of chaos to the outside. He was on the inside and was able to kind of get himself, was quick enough to get himself out of that. And then I go underneath with Saxton for Cal Lynch and Jamie Rodriguez. Yes, it was an off-the-turf event. Yes, it was a fairly easy-esque field as compared to the rest, to a couple of horses, and the two aforementioned horses in this field. But that horse, that's a Cal Lynch horse I can really trust. And plus, he's 27% for this Capital Meet thus far. But I like the outside position that he gets for the first time. He's able to, you know, have that mental capacity to come from, you know, essentially in that stalking position, which I think he will find himself in. Because the thing with, I think Gary was, I have a feeling that Gary was, I'm not going to say that Gary wasn't happy with the ride, because I don't know the dialect between Gary, Georgie, and Scotty. But I know that Gary wanted that horse on the front end in Nashua, and he didn't get it. So he's just looking. This isn't a move I normally see Gary do. So we're just going to have to see what happens. And which is why I'm just kind of leaving him cautiously underneath.
Well, and I got to mention, remarkably, with Carol Cedeno.
Yes, of course.
Lynn Ashby was looking for his first win at the meet, but remarkably is competitive in here and might get a very nice suck along trip down inside. You know, has mixed it up with Do It for Michael and has run behind It's Hammer Time as well. But that horse is okay. The opportunity call.
Yeah, sorry, Steve. I actually put him ahead of It's Hammer Time. So I go 3-6.
Nice.
I leave It's Hammer Time off completely. I go 3-6-1-4. I put Sacred Thunder, the other Gary Capuano horse, with Tori Alba, he had a hard Marilyn Million nursery. So it's interesting to see what Gary's going to do. And I'm kind of sitting there with It's Hammer Time off of my ticket. And if Gary does leave him in, I might be putting him in.
All right. Forward and talk about the Smart Halo. These are the 2-year-old fillies going 3/4.
Yeah, this is the most exciting race of the day for me, and I'm going to go with Days. That is a very highly touted filly very fittingly owned and bred by Dark Hollow Farm. High expectations of this one in that second start. Answered some of the questions. So we just are dealing with raw talent here now. Then we go over to Caprice for Cal Lynch with Jamie Rodriguez. And I think this one has been doing a little bit. He got a really good education last time out. She did with a lot of the hard work. She's had it relatively easy in those Delaware efforts. And then she tried the two turns for the first time. Well, weirdly enough, she did not break. It was kind of a half welt coming out of the gate there. Got behind dirt, got behind horses. She didn't like it, but she acclimated extremely quickly. And then she ended up going 4 wide at the beginning of that second turn and had to deal with all of that, had to overcome all of that, and then was drifted out while the runner kind of stayed on the rail. The runner wasn't actually too far ahead. The winner wasn't too far ahead of Caprice. So I'm just wondering if there's a chance that she may bounce or regress just a tick mentally, just because I felt like she got a lot of hard lessons there, and yes, she answered them, but they were hard lessons. So there may be a chance of her bouncing, which is just why I go with Days on top. And of course, I was very impressed with Days to begin with. I just think she's raw talent, but we'll have our answers there. And then Oliviera, Phil Schoenthal, Angel Rodriguez, loved that inside rail move in that first effort at Colonial. Didn't get away quick enough the first two jumps out of the gate were not perfect. The rider got a little bit unbalanced, kind of hit her in the mouth a little bit, and then Angel Rodriguez did the right thing in keeping her together, but she lost that race in the beginning when the gates opened a bit. So I honestly was very tempted to put this filly, Olivieras, before Caprice, but I'm going to keep it. I'm going to keep it 3-6-7. Just watch Beyond Belief and Power Driver as well.
2-6-7.
Yeah.
Yeah. You mentioned Oliveira and Phil Schoenthal. I saw where Phil, where they've supplemented Determined Kingdom to the Keeneland sale is gonna sell this week in the Horse of Racing Age sale. You know, the eighth race, we should just should get a pick from the eighth because it's a very nice group. A dozen there, well, maybe even, it looks like a dozen because you got an MTO. Second level allowance going a mile and eighth on the turf. And at 5-2, I understand Circle Home, Miguel Vera with Heavy on Toledo. But at 8-1, take a look at Lady Out of the Blue for Mike Matz on the rail. Today's the day, or tomorrow is the day. Angel Cruz aboard, Lady Out of the Blue for me at 8-1.
Nightmare to handicap, Steve. Absolutely. She got that inside trip that she's going to be getting here today. And Matz has gotten a couple nice prices here. So as far as momentum over here in Maryland, it's been very positive for Matt. I absolutely respect this filly. She got that experience on the inside coming off of that tiny layoff, and I think she's definitely going to be delivering as well. I think you find a good value at 8-1. I do go with Circle Home on top, though.
Absolutely. All right, that gets us to the nightcap. Here's the 38 go-go. We got eight of them, and Battle Cry, Victor Barboza, your 9-5 favorite.
Yeah, Foxy Jr. Bell.
Yep.
Loved what I... Yep, I'm sticking out with Foxy Jr., definitely. I go 3-5-6-7 there, Steve.
Foxy Jr. and Malibu Beauty, who I do like too, Gary Capuano. Foggy Night for Butchie. Nice. It's a very good card. There's a lot of good racing around tomorrow, and Laurel, one of the options. Callie, we're all looking forward to the pie giveaway.
Oh, so am I, Steve. Can't wait for it.
It's one of the great traditions in racing, the Maryland Jockey Club pie giveaway. No more mincemeat, though.
To Thanksgiving.
Exactly.
Yeah, we got a countdown. I'll be on task before then because we've got some stakes on the 23rd as well. But hey, wonderful card that we've got on the 9th. Had to wrap my brain around a couple of these. So join in.
That's a good card, Callie. Thanks. Thanks again for the work on the betting companion too.
Always happy to help. Thanks for having me on the show, Steve.
Miss Francois to you. Callie Francois, everybody. Let's take the midpoint break. We've got Scully and we've got Nick. We've got Hammer, Dave Hill for the second half. See if there's anything we're missing here. There's a couple of good opportunities at Laurel tomorrow, looks like. We'll see what Scully makes of the Churchill action. And I also got to see if James, if he did anything in that first Kentucky Derby future wager pool. So I'll ask him about that. Woodbine, we're doing the Del Mar. I think that's, yeah, all right. It's not bad. That's it. All right. Well, so we'll save it. All right. Let's take the break. We'll come back. Second half and plenty more handicapping and plenty more action and we'll go to, we got to get Scully. I think we'll have to go Scully. Brian will have to go Scully and then Nick. I hope Nick is available. And we'll get his take. Back after this weekend preview at the races.
On Sirius XM Radio. Who are you betting on?
How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action in thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
Want to know a secret? The Massachusetts Breeding Program pays huge bonuses for finishing first, second, or third at any racetrack in the country. You didn't know that, did you? Massbreds get paid up to an additional 25% of their purse earnings for the owner, and breeder, and stallion owner, and developer. It's the best-kept secret in racing. Till now. Tell all your friends, and to learn more, visit massbreds.com.
Whether you're new to the racing game or just looking to enhance your operation, Hermitage Farm and Goshen can help you. We are conveniently located between Churchill Downs and Keeneland Racecourse and near world-renowned equine hospitals. With spacious paddocks, expert staff, and qualified veterinarians, we offer full-service boarding, breeding, and sales preparation, as well as post-operative care and layup services. Visit us in person or online at hermitagefarm.com.
Just minutes from downtown Saratoga Springs, you'll find GMP Farm, a revolutionary state-of-the-art equine therapy and rehabilitation facility offering the most advanced equipment and knowledgeable staff to care for your equine athlete. From oxygen therapy and laser treatments to thermal imaging, dry salt room, and cryotherapy treatment, all alongside a 7/8 mile Tapita training track. GMP Farm is revolutionizing equine care. To see a full list of services and book your horse's rejuvenation session, visit gmpfarm.net today.
Two-year-olds in California, Kentucky, please consider Bleeder Shield. The leading all-natural paste used to greatly reduce or eliminate EIPH. The list of trainers who trust Bleeder Shield is endless. Shouldn't you join the team? To learn more, contact Joseph Vellante at 215-501-6880.
PA Bred, I think we've built a brand at this point.
It's excitement at every step.
Roses for Deborah just set a new track record.
On average, for the past decade, Pennsylvania paid over $28 million a year in breeders' awards, restricted races, and owner bonuses. Plus, PA Bred shine on the world's biggest stage. Just three states have bred more Breeders' Cup winners. Learn more at PABred.com.